Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. You know, this headset is really messing up my hairdo.
Oh, dear. What a shame.
Anyhow, we're going to start with an interview you did. Can you talk about
this? You mean Peter.
Peter.
Co-host Peter actually got to do an interview all on his own. That's a rare thing. Well, but seriously, folks, it's wonderful when you can have a good time and support a good cause at the same time. And the Passion for Wine event, which is organized by the Pittsburgh chapter of Cystic Fibrosis, does just such a wonderful job. We wanted to make sure that you really have a chance to know a little bit more about what's going on with the wines at this event. So we invited Ken Freeman, who's the guest winemaker for this year's VIP reception, and Tim Kilcullen of Capital Wines and Spirits, who sponsored the event for several years. So here they are talking about A Passion for Wine in Pittsburgh, November 7th, 2009. An event called Passion for Wine, supporting cystic fibrosis, is one of the biggest and best parties in Pittsburgh every year. On the Menu's attended the last 2 years, we're going to be there again this year. We really want to encourage you to attend the event because it's all about wine. It's all about some very special wines and a great evening in the Pittsburgh Winter Garden in PPG Place, which is probably the best party space in Pennsylvania. Maybe there's a bigger party space in Philadelphia, but I doubt it. It's really a grand occasion, and you should all be encouraged to attend, and how you sign up will be on our website very shortly. So, listeners, we look forward to seeing you there. It's worthwhile coming a little distance because it is a very special event. And on the phone today, I have Ken Freeman, who's a California winemaker of some note, and we're going to ask him to talk about what makes his wine so special. And Tim, I don't have your last name written down in front of me, and it's complicated. So, Tim, why?
It's Kilcullen.
Tim Kilcullen is from Capital Wines and Spirits, and they've been supporting the Passion for Wine event for all the time it's been going on. So, good morning, gentlemen. Delight to talk to you. Ken, you're calling from a long way away, so why don't you say hi and tell us a little bit about Freeman Wines.
Well, thanks, Peter. We're honored to participate in the event. Look forward to coming to Pittsburgh. My wife and I produce handcrafted Pinot Noir and Chardonnay out in the Sonoma Coast, Russian River.
Don't forget your...
Yes, and we produce very small quantities handcrafted of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in very small lots, and we've received a lot of accolades for our wines from around the country and very high scores, and we're very excited to share the wines.
Now, give us a dot on the map in California.
Well, we're located in Sebastopol, which is in the far western part of the Russian River, and our vineyards are around our winery there and also right out in the Sonoma Coast, so overlooking the coastline there. So very high elevation, very cool weather, grape growing in that area.
So this is ideal for the two grapes in which you specialize, right?
Absolutely. And what we do a little differently is we use a very Burgundian approach to our winemaking. So if you'd come visit us, and which we hope you do, we use the same techniques they use in Burgundy, very handcrafted, but we use the fruit profile that we get out in the Russian River and the Sonoma Coast.
Now, your wine's not being terribly well known, at least to me, and possibly because they're handcrafted, not well known generally. Is there a better known name that you would say it's a little bit like that? Or is that Romani Conti? Oh, there you go. Well, that's a good comparison.
Our wines are really served in many of the top restaurants across the country, the French Laundry, John George in New York, Danielle. So sommeliers really like the style, the understated nature of our wine. So we've got a pretty pretty nice base of business with the leading restaurateurs across the country.
Now, there's a very special occasion when people have the opportunity to taste your wines. Tim, you want to tell us a little bit about
that? This is truly remarkable that a winery of this stature is the VIP sponsor of this event. It's an opportunity that really isn't afforded a lot of people. The handcrafted nature and very special grape sourcing that Ken and his wife do results in very limited production. It's not very often that a winery of this size participates in an event like this.
Okay, and it's a very special part of the event because the tasting takes place before the main event, correct?
Yes. So this would be for the VIP portion.
Okay, that's great. And not to forget also that Ken, you're coming in for more than one day. And you're going to be pouring with our good friend
Kevin
we're Joyce.
We're doing a wine dinner at the Carlton on Friday night. So looking forward to spending the weekend in Pittsburgh. And, we're going to be serving on Saturday at the gala our 06 and our 07 Riofu Chardonnay. To give you an idea, we make about 400 or 500 cases of this wine by hand. So these are very limited release wines.
Well, that's very generous of you to be bringing it to Pennsylvania. We're very pleased about that. And don't forget, listeners, if you want a special wine treat, you should be sure to sign up for the VIP tasting as well as the event as a whole. Now, Tim, a little bit of a plug for Capital Wines and Spirits. You support this event. You support lots of events.
We do. And I'll tell you what, as a Philadelphian, I can say that we're never better received than in Pittsburgh. I really enjoy events there because they're so well supported. Great people and come out in numbers that really surpass anything that we do in Philadelphia.
Now, what's going to be? It's the event's called Passion for Wine.
Yes.
What do you think is going to be pouring at the main event?
Well, we tried to get an array of wines and styles from all throughout California. We'll be pouring some sparkling wine from Gloria Ferrer, their Sonoma Brut, which is produced from their estate vineyards in Carneros. And much like Ken's wines, they're based upon Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and it's primarily Pinot Noir, and it's really high quality wine.
Okay, and then once we've done the sparklers, what are we going to move on to?
Well, then we can taste some more Pinot Noir that's not quite as limited as Freeman Pinot Noir, but we're going to have some Pinot Noir from Sonoma County, the 2007 Pinot Noir from Chateau Saint Jean, which is really lovely and has gotten a lot of great press recently.
And that's that's a winery that got a lot of attention when Wine Spectator voted the Cabernet Wine of the Year, right?
Yes, and for a long time, and something that a practice that Ken follows in terms of single vineyard designation, really Chateau Saint Jean was one of the first wineries to focus upon single vineyards and appellations long before they became part of the law. And long before they became part of the rules of American winemaking, Chateau Saint Jean was on the forefront of that. And we're also going to show their Merlot, too, though, for those of you who insist on Bordelais-style wines.
Okay, well, what about those people who insist on drinking white?
Well, from another small area and a little tiny vineyard up in Lake County, we have Two Angels Sauvignon Blanc. And that comes from the Shannon Ridge Ranch Vineyards, which I know Ken knows about, and it's a really delicious Sauvignon Blanc, very full-bodied and rich. I think people will enjoy it. I encourage anyone who enjoys Chardonnay to try this Sauvignon Blanc because it will give you a different flavor profile, but in a very surprisingly rich format.
Well, thank you both for joining us on the menu. The event Passion for Wine is at the PPG Pittsburgh Winter Garden on November 7th, which is Saturday. And if you want more Freeman wines before that, you can sign up for Kevin Joyce's wine dinner at the Carlton, and I'll put the websites that you can use for that purpose for both events. They'll be up in OTM News for you. And Ken and Tim, we'll look forward to seeing you at the event, and I guess at both events if you really have an appetite for it, listeners. Thank you so much, gentlemen, and Ken, travel safely as you head over here, and Tim, you don't have quite as far to come, but we hope you'll travel safely as well, and we'll all have a good time together.
Peter, thank you very much.
I look forward to it.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, so there's no excuse. We'll see you there. You had plenty of notice.
It's a fun event.
It sure is. And incidentally, there'll be a large collection of on-the-menu donated cookbooks that'll be available for you to bid on in the silent auction as well. Yet another reason to be there. And now we'd better have another reason to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station. www.aspstation.net.
Well, here we are back again, Ann and Peter Haig. Keep connected, as we say nowadays, and we're going to take a little stroll back to our discussion of Portland, Oregon, and our wonderful time with all the wild game.
Wild game and some pretty wild people, too.
Oh, we
And so I think you'll enjoy it. It'll make you even more interested in going out there. So a wild game event on the side of Mount Hood in the wonderful, beautiful mountain state of Oregon.
We've got all kinds of interesting people for you to meet.
It's always a polite thing to do if you're going to a party to say thank you and hello to the host. So Jeff Latham is our host at a party with just a few of his friends, like about 150 or 200 of them, and a lot of chefs as well. Jeff, tell us about this event that brings us to the foothills of Mount Hood.
It's called Wild About Game Festival, and we are where?
We're in Welch's, Oregon, at the base of Mount Hood, a beautiful part of our state. I chose this area because it's surrounded by the wild mushrooms, huckleberries. It's just a great resort for hosting our event. And we started 9 years ago with 50 of my friends, and we've built on it every year.
Now, Jeff, you said before we came on there, you said mine's a very small company, but I think it's just a little more than that in terms of the way that you really dominate the market you're in. So would you explain that to everybody?
Well, I think we should mention it's Nikki.
Nikki USA is Nikki the name USA. Of the company.
Well, we really, I think, 1994, a great chef moved to Portland from New York and said, son, you're selling rabbits around town, but I want you to sell more things. I want you to be like people are in New York and with high-quality products.
And who was that?
Fleet Below at the Heathman. He's the culinary director.
Yeah, and he's
Heathman,
still there.
And he's at the Mac Club now. And so he's overseeing two great locations. He's my mentor. He's driven me to pursue the highest quality products there are. And that's what's helped my company grow. And when people look for high quality, they always check at our company.
And when it's wild, explain the concept of wild.
What is traditionally wild is our rabbit and quail and buffalo and venison and elk. But really, anymore, it's a farm raised on small farms. I have about 36 farms that raise anything from quail to rabbit to buffalo, venison, elk. And there's really only one thing that's truly hunted that you can market, and that's wild boar out of Texas. But
I didn't have any of that today yet.
No, we're not featuring our wild boar here.
Okay.
We're everything.
Everything is Oregon.
But you source a lot of these ingredients. So we had lamb from somebody called Anderson, who's in Oregon.
Fifth generation lambing family. I mean, we started the company with just game. And then you get to a point where if you want to add more employees and you want to continue to grow, you've got to add the best of the best. So we added a fifth generation lambing family to our products that we cut at our processing plant. We have a great pork, which is the new line of pork that's called Tails and Trotters. It's a hazelnut finished hog.
Love that, by the way.
That
love
is
it.
Very few people in the country have tried yet, but I'm so excited
well,
for these two
menus,
guys.
We saw it on menus then.
In fact, we had some today, but we had it on two different menus already since we've been in Portland. But let's conclude. This event is going to happen again next year?
Yes. Yes.
And it
well,
will be.
I would like for him to explain, please, what exactly takes place at this event.
Well, that's what I was going to do. And then I was going to say, people, you should put it on your calendar next year, because if you miss this, you're missing out on a good party.
Right.
We actually haven't set the date yet. And then shortly after, we should have set the date, but it'll be our 10th year. We're going to bring back most of the winners over the last 10 years.
So it'll be a celebration.
It'll be a big celebration. It's always at the harvest time. Try to finish at the end of wine harvest in our area, which complements my game very well. Or it's right when the seasons are changing and going into fall. It's a kickoff to our busy season. So you have to look at our website.
Yeah, how about that website? Can you give us that?
NikkiUSA.com, spelled NikkiUSA.com.
Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're just itching to go back to the party because you have 1,001 things to control.
You know, I'm being a real nudge, but I
you are.
We don't really know all the different things that are going on. So if somebody's interested in coming, what all goes on here?
Well, the anchor to the event is 10 chefs in a cooking competition. It's a black box. It's like an Iron Chef of game, I like to call it. The chef starts in the morning at 11 o'clock, goes in, pulls a letter out of a hat, goes into the cooler, and he finds a box. And inside that box, that's when he finds out. Today, the first product was an air-chilled duck from Grimaud Farms. And then the next one was a rabbit from our Nikki Farms. And on for every 10 minutes for 10 guys. Or gals.
I mean, certainly chefs can kind of anticipate a range of products they're going to get.
They
it's
are
not like Iron Chef where somebody will stick in a, iguana or something.
The fact of the matter is that they do get a list of the 10 proteins that could be in there. Sometimes we throw in a little venison heart or elk liver or buffalo tongue to kind of give them options. So it's and then they have a pantry of local produce that we have gotten for them, wild mushrooms, huckleberries, and they have 2 hours to plate 5 plates of the same dish for the judges, one for pictures and one for my staff. Then besides that going on, we've got cooking demos. Last year's winners come back and do a cooking demo with our product featuring this year rabbit, quail, and local venison.
The quail is fabulous. You also get listeners to sample the product that the chefs are demoing.
Mm-hmm.
Yums. Okay.
Yep. And then we have what I call our local, our marketplace, artisan marketplace of my best vendors. Some of them are coming from Wisconsin. Actually, two of them from Wisconsin, one from New York, and several farms from Oregon are here along with our own line that we do.
And you graze that all day because I've been grazing.
Then there's local wines. We've got two wineries, Willa Kinsey and Stevenson this year, our partners in the wine. We've got Rogue Ales here, and we've got Hood River Distilleries also here. And so it's a nonstop from 11 to 4, all the food that you want to eat. And then we also have Janie Hibbler, my partner in founding this event. Or signing
Janie, I didn't realize that.
She's here. She did
great.
Wild About Game cookbook, and that's what the event was named after. And then we've got Tom Douglas signing cookbooks today, and we have Vitaly Paley, one of my favorite Portland chefs at Paley's Place.
Ours too, yeah.
So it's basically cookbook signing, tastings, more wine, and then really unique, I give tours through the kitchen for people in small groups that want to see the line of fire in there, where there's 10 guys and two banks of ovens, and they're all jostling for room. And actually, it's pretty amazing to see how all these guys create room for each other to make sure it's a fair competition.
It's like a ballet.
Yeah. It's I actually like it. I relate it to a golf. I'm a golf commentator.
Oh,
there's
okay.
Chef Giuseppe from Harvest Vine, who's using the Nicky Farms rabbit. He's on the 10th hole. No.
We should have done that. We should have set that up in advance, and you could have done that via on the menu radio.
Yeah, I could carry all this equipment into the kitchen. Sure, why not?
And then the grand finale is at night.
Tonight we have a feast of about 13 or 14 different game items that Chef Paul Bosch from the resort has put together. An elk loin carving station, air-chilled turkey carving. The only air-chilled turkeys in the country are going to have tonight for dinner. We've got the hazelnut hog. We're doing a half a hog for the dinner. I mean, last year we had a rabbit dish with a pumpkin spatzel that was just off the Richter scale. Squab tamales, and I thank everybody and all my sponsors and people that help us make this a reality every year.
And I mean, I was astounded about how reasonably priced it is. Reasonably, it's inexpensive, relatively speaking.
It's really $55 for the dinner, and it doesn't include any wine. There's a no host bar for that. And the day event was $25, and a combo ticket is only $75. And it's not a huge amount of people here. It's just very, very high-end foodies that are having a blast with us.
Well, we're having a blast, and I can't thank you enough for inviting us.
Well, thank you both for coming.
I'm glad
you're having a good time, and I'm looking forward to our 10th year.
Us too. Invite us back, please.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you so much, Jeff. We love Tom Douglas, or at least I love Tom Douglas. Hi, Tom. It's good talking
to
you again.
Does Peter not love me?
Oh, I think he probably does.
Oh, okay, good. I love Peter. That's a story for another day.
Another day. We're on a time frame. You just finished judging the culinary competition at this Wild About Game event, and they're about to announce the winners. In fact, you have to announce them, so we're going to
exactly.
go with
mm-hmm.
So you're pretty well eaten out by this time, right?
I am. I've just did 10 different tastes of quite intricate dishes that they've come up with.
All wild game.
Wild game. And they each had, they each got a lottery to see what critter they had to cook. And so some people had it much tougher than others. One person got a rack of venison. That's pretty simple stuff.
Yeah.
Another person got a buffalo heart and tongue. So there was a bit of a challenge.
I'm envious. I've been after buffalo tongue. I'd like to cook one.
There was someone who was making a, would you call it a roulade? I mean, it was a sausage shape, but then had different layers.
Right.
That looked really
wrapped
good.
Wrapped in cabbage leaves.
That looked really good.
It was good. It was texturally challenging, I would suggest.
I would say.
And we had a couple of those throughout
too,
the 10 dishes, yeah.
Okay, so we're going to hear the winners in a few minutes, but you've got to go and announce them. I want you to at least tell update us on what you're doing. You're always doing 10 million things in Seattle with your restaurant empire.
Well, you know, we don't like to sit still. We have to. We made a decision. I just turned 50, you know, which isn't.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's exactly. So, well, it's so odd.
I would like to turn 50.
when you go out to look at a lease these days, and you look and see it's 20-year lease, and you think to yourself, oh, my God, I'm going to be 70 years old at the end of this lease. It makes you rethink about putting pen to paper at the bottom of that lease. So, anyway,
recap what all you own right now.
So I have the Dahlia Lounge, Etta's Seafood, the Palace Kitchen, the Palace Ballroom, the Dahlia Bakery, Lola, Serious Pie, and Rub with Love Spice Rubs and Sauces.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That
one,
we sell in 5,000 different stores around the country.
Yeah, and while we just were thinking about it, give us your web, because you do sell the stuff off the web.
Of course, yeah, TomDouglas.com.
Okay.
Pretty simple, huh?
Well, that's very simple.
See, I came from the area where .coms kind of started, and so I actually got my name. I've had it for, I don't know, 15 years.
Where was this?
In Seattle.
Oh, they started there. Okay.
Well, that's really, not started, but with
it's
the
really
whole...
It's funny. Most people get the name when they're born, but in California, they wait,
wait until you get a domain.
Wait until you get a .com.
Now, you have a new... you always have something new coming up, but this is very exciting.
You know, if you don't have something new, you die. That's my theory. And I don't mean die literally, like gravesite die, but I'm talking about... restaurants and this business is all about being fresh and new and exciting and current, and so it's been
I'm surprised
part of my business plan.
Before, what you're coming up with, I love the idea. I wish I had thought of it.
Well, it's just part of my business plan to stay fresh.
Okay,
I want people to not stop thinking about me. It's just because some new little place, sexy little hot spot, opens around the corner, right? You still got to support the old guys. But no, I'm looking to open a bunch of new places over the next few years. There's, because of the economy, there's some good deals out there. But at the same time, I have plenty to handle myself. So I'm looking at a different kind of business model to maybe put some young chefs that I think have a future in the business, some potential as business people. You know, because just because you're a good cook doesn't make you a good business person.
Right.
And
in
so
fact, usually the opposite.
Well, it's often the opposite.
Not usually, yeah. Frequently.
So I'm looking for people that have that magic combination of being a good boss, you know, treating employees kindly, having a good business sense, and then on top of that, having the wherewithal to be a good cook and a standard bearer for our industry. And then that's who I want to invest in. And I'm coming up with a strategy to get them in business with me and then get them in business without me. You know, an exit strategy for me as the investor so that everyone comes out whole. And at the end of the day, they're not working for me for the rest of their lives. They end up working for themselves. Their whole goal when they go into this is they want to own their own restaurant. And owning their own restaurant isn't necessarily owning a piece of business that has 20 partners in it. So that's the idea, is to get people, you know, to invest in people, get a return. I'm not going to do it for free. I want a return. But at the same time, have an exit strategy so that they come out whole and I come out whole.
So, I mean, you would be the sole investor. I mean, they wouldn't have to deal with all this.
Correct.
Oh, I mean, I can't tell you as a victim of the investor system with my restaurant, I can tell you how much I value this. This is fabulous.
Well, I think having a foreseeable out at the end of the, you know, foreseeable light at the end of the tunnel
right.
is a really good strategy to keep a motivated partner.
Well, you'll keep us posted on when is the first one debut? You're still doing
It's about 6 months is my
okay.
guess.
And so I guess you can't tell us who you're dealing with.
No, I can't. Yeah.
I thought I'd sneak that one.
You wouldn't know him anyway. I'm not looking at experienced restaurateurs. I'm looking at people mostly that have come up through my system and have worked hard for us and have been good employees and hard workers and then, you know, give them a shot.
Ingenious, as always, Tom Douglas. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Let's go eat some more game.
I'm so gamed out at this point. Thanks.
That Tom Douglas is always up to something, isn't he?
Oh, he's incredible.
and don't forget to watch out for the Wild Game event around about October 2010. because it's worth the trip now. we need another trip. We need to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. Are you still hungry? We have lots more for you to sample.
Indeed. A great chef from a restaurant in Portland called, what's it called, Wildwood?
Oh, he's wonderful.
A fascinating character who grows vegetables and fruits on a farm outside of Portland, and the host chef for the event at the resort at the mountain. All together in this segment.
Dustin Clark is executive chef of which has turned out to be, over the years, one of our favorite restaurants in Portland, Oregon, Wildwood. And we're talking to him today in connection with this wild game dinner. Wild About Game Dinner. Hello, Dustin.
Hi.
Talk to us about the event first, and then I want to talk about Wildwood.
The event here is put on by Nikki, who's a game purveyor there in Portland, Oregon. They do it, I think this is the ninth year they've done it now, where they invite all the local chefs from Portland, which is a really tight-knit kind of group. Some chefs from Seattle.
You have fun together, right?
Oh, it gets a little nuts sometimes, but we all play together really well. So it's a big invite for that. Sometimes you just get to hang out. Sometimes you have to do a demonstration.
Would you do a demo?
I did a demonstration on a stuffed rabbit saddle and confit rabbit today.
I want to taste that, but I don't know where it is.
Oh, it's gone by now. My demo just ended, so.
All right.
But it's the same. Last year I was in the competition. I placed second with rabbit in the cooking competition. So you can't compete again once you place. So.
But you're a rabbit expert?
It's one of my favorite game animals. Know it inside and out, literally.
Yep. My mother always
I popped in and you were looking for the hidden ribbon. It seemed to me like you weren't finding it all that easily.
Yeah, they're pretty hard to find. They're
what
down
is
in
it?
There.
The rib.
There's floating ribs, kind of like a human would have, that aren't right on the backbone area, and they sink into the belly meat, so really hard to see when you're trying to butcher them. They want to poke holes in the saddle that you're trying to stuff. So.
Oh, and you don't want that.
You don't want the holes because you're stuffing a leak out.
Well, you chefs all seem to have a great time together, and I guess we're going to taste that at the buffet later. But let's talk a little bit also about your iconic restaurant,
yes.
Wildwood.
Indeed.
Where we saw you a couple nights ago because we were eating there and wouldn't miss it for the world.
Exactly.
How old is it?
Wildwood's now going on. See, it opened in 94, so doing rapid math, what is that, 14 years almost now?
Wow.
So
it is still
15,
fresh.
Thanks. I never claimed to be a mathematician.
I know. He does that. I use a calculator. But, you know, I mean, it's still very fresh.
Absolutely. We focus on, that's our focus. We get the best products of the region all the time.
Fresh in ideas. And
oh, well, we change the menu every 3 weeks, so nothing gets too old, stale, like you don't get tired of it. It keeps your palate alive. It keeps the cooks on edge because they have to try something new all the time, so.
Now, you've been there for a while. You were a sous chef.
Going on 12 years.
Sous chef
in 2000.
And then became executive chef.
Almost 4 years ago.
Okay. And just give our listeners a little bit of idea about the menu.
The Wildwood menu, as I was kind of saying before, focuses on seasonality, locality, showcasing all the smaller farms. We basically put a lot of them on the map there. Like the farmer's market, we bring that to your plate. Like if you walked around like the Saturday farmers market, you see all those prime vegetables that you don't see in supermarkets. That's what we deal with. I mean, which is kind of a burden for a restaurant because it's not cheap. It's really hard to control that cost because you're using premium, well taken care of vegetables, meats, etc.
Yeah, but it's all those years into it and you're jammed.
Exactly. Well, people recognize that. We're known for that flavor. I mean, you're gonna get the best when you come in.
I'm just going to run some, let's do some proteins. Your favorite fish?
My favorite fish to work with, honestly, is, I like oilier fishes. So I like mackerels. I like sardines. I like anchovies.
Oh, sardines are supposed to be having a great renaissance.
Actually, right now is a good, one of my favorite places to go have a glass of wine and stuff. Bar Avignon, which is the former Salmia of Wildwood, it's a little bar on the east side, has salt cured sardines with pecorino and caponata.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's pretty awesome. But yeah, oily fishes I like. I'm not a big salmon fan. I know it is, but I know how to prepare it well, so I don't mind cooking it. I myself don't crave it so much.
Yeah. I've been overdosing on salmon and halibut.
I'm sure you have.
Now, the other evening you did a porchetta.
Correct.
And then the next day you did something with the rest of the porchetta, which I had in a sandwich.
Yep.
Explain that one, because
that was so
delicious.
Yeah, well, basically the porchetta, the day you roast it whole. And we just carve it off from there, so it's that nice, you know, fresh roast. The next day, it's hard to reheat for like an entree like that, so we shave it thinner, so it's like little flakes of the pork belly, and do a sandwich out of it. So it's a really succulent, moist, awesome sandwich.
And you put some mushroom duxelles.
There was chanterelles, yeah.
Just in case it wasn't quite rich enough.
As if you didn't have enough going on there, we had to make a little bit more, kind of push you over the edge.
And the bun was house-made.
I'd stress everything made there. Even like mechanized things, we don't use a lot of food processors and stuff like that. Like when you first start cooking there, I make you make aioli in a mortar and pestle.
You're kidding.
No, I have kind of a fear of machines on that. I think you should have your hands make the product. Like when you do the duxelles, you should chop it by hand. You get a better texture. It's not mush. It's actually physically cut by a knife.
What shaped you? How did you get here?
How did I get here?
You're from
I'm from South Dakota. Yeah, I actually had a...
Which is not that far, but it's certainly culturally years away.
I don't know if they're going to catch up to where I'm living now, but I had an old girlfriend that lived out in the Portland area, and I was actually living in Vermont, going to New England Culinary Institute. And she called me and was like, you know, you would fit in with the personality of the West Coast in Portland. And I've always had an obsession with Alice Waters restaurant, Chez Panisse, that in the Bay Area, but never could really afford to live in the Bay Area. So I came out to Portland with a suitcase, found a roommate, and just went at it. Started working at Zephyro, which is no longer there, and then worked at Wildwood and took it from there. And got to meet all these great chefs now, too, because a lot of them are my age. They're opening their own places and seeing them, the places they've worked, and it's kind of cool.
What do you see down the line? You've kind of done it all already.
I'm opening my own restaurant. I am the executive chef of Wildwood, but it wasn't my restaurant to start. I basically took control of the restaurant. I'd like a smaller place. I mean, I love the place, but it's a little large for my taste. I like a little more like 40-seat intimate kind of joint.
And what would you put on your menu right off the bat in your own restaurant?
It'd be super simple dishes. I'd have like two wood-fired ovens there and a wood-fired grill. I love cooking over live fire as opposed to gas. It's got more character to it. Especially when I do catering right now. I do outdoor events and I just have an 8-foot-long barbecue with charcoal. I love that stuff. So it'd be something really rustic. I'm not too much in that hoity-toity play with the food, the point, making foams, all that stuff. You'll never see that on my menu. But really clean, precise flavors that taste like the ingredient. I don't like to hide things. Don't like to mask it. I just like to show off what it is.
Well, we love the dinner we had.
Excellent.
Loved it. It was lunch, I guess. Was it lunch? Yeah.
I'm allowed to catch up with you at Wildwood, or we'll catch up with you in our own plates, whichever way it is. Next time we come to Portland, wherever you are,
I'll be happy to be there.
So let us know.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye. Pleasure.
How does one get from Puerto Rico to Portland, Oregon? We're going to hear from Manuel Riccio, and he has a story that will tell us. Yeah. Tell us. Hello. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, yeah. You were born and raised in Puerto Rico.
That's correct. And when I was in college, I went to study abroad in Spain at the University of Seville. And there I met my current wife, Leslie Lucas Riccio, and she was from Oregon. So
that's how you get from Puerto Rico to Portland, Oregon. You make a right turn and go
a few thousand miles.
And look for the prettiest girl you can find.
Absolutely. And then hop on the plane and come out.
Now, you have a company called Viridian Farms, and I was taken with one of your products. I've been taken with one of your products for a long time. It's called Ice Plant.
Yes, that's correct. In France, they call it ficuad glacial, which also translates to glacier lettuce. And it's a plant that looks like a succulent. It grows wild in parts of the Canary Islands, Greece, and Africa around the Cape of Good Hope. And it's also cultivated a lot in southern France. My wife and I first saw ficuad glacial in Avignon when we were at a market.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
We first had it in England.
Wow, that's fantastic.
And I've longed for it ever since. encountered it at the Love Apple Farm, which provides produce for Manresa.
Growing this in our garden.
Oh, yeah, except that nobody will give me any seeds.
Well, those you have to get from France, so.
It seems a bit convoluted how you get them.
Yes.
And I'm not sure they grow in Pittsburgh.
I think it could. You would have to definitely grow it in black plastic on raised beds with good with good drainage. That's the
way. Maybe I just should buy it.
Now, this is not the only thing you do, though.
You
have a whole farm creating things for Portland chefs?
That's correct. We farm approximately 50 acres, and we have a variety of fruit, so different berries, stone fruit, and also orchard crops, so different pears and apples. But we specialize in products from Southern Europe, particularly France, Spain, and Italy. One of the things that we're harvesting right now, for example, is our piment d'Espelette. It's a pepper that is used in a lot of the Basque cuisine. The culinary origin is southwestern France, the little town of Espelette.
Yeah.
It's a pepper that we grow and then dry in the sun for 4 weeks and then grind up the peppers, and it's used as a spice in everything from chocolate to curing hams to seafood dishes. It's a really fantastic balance of sweet and spicy.
Now I want to ask how you got the seeds for that.
Well,
yeah, I mean, just tell our listeners how closely guarded any kind of taking away of these seeds is from France.
It's you can't take it on the plane, though, actually. Customs will take them away from you. So we work with a couple importers who are licensed to do it. We have to get phytosanitary certificates over in Europe for the seeds, and then they bring it in. Now, sometimes it presents a challenge for us because the seeds may be stuck in customs for a month before we actually get them, so it delays our plant start dates. So.
Well, you didn't pick an actually easy kind of an agricultural project here, but you're very well-renowned and respected in what you do, and you're making a good showing at this event, so we've really enjoyed meeting you.
Oh, thank you so much. You know,
it's really funny. We've talked to lots of chefs while we've been here in Portland, and they all talk about the small producers that they buy from. I think you might actually be the first in the vegetable category that we've actually talked to, but believe me, they all paid tribute to you, and I'm sure you don't distribute to a wide audience, so a lot of on-the-menu listeners won't be able to have access, but if you have a website with information about what you're doing, I know they'd love to have it.
Yes, it's viridianfarms.com, spelled V-I-R-I-D-I-A-N, farms, F-A-R-M-S.com.
Well, Manuel, muchas gracias.
De nada.
Paul Bosch, executive chef of the resort at the Mountain. You've been very much a part of this wonderful event. Everybody has had such a wonderful time. And I might say it's not ended yet. We still have a buffet dinner tonight, which you also much fussed about. I mean, you said it was really complicated to do all this.
It was. I mean, the first last year when we did it, I was mainly acting as a host just to kind of get a feel for how everything worked out. And it was a learning experience in itself. But this year, I think we put a little bit more time and effort into it than we did last year, which we try to do every year. We try to top ourselves. I mean,
and I think this is really in the roster of festivals people should start thinking about coming to.
I agree. I mean, Jeff, the owner of Nikki Foods, was very happy last year and was very, very happy about bringing it back this year. And from the sounds of it, there's nothing confirmed, so I'm not going to – I don't want to be quoted on this, but he's talking about bringing it back next year. So, I mean,
he also said that. But, I mean, you have the top chefs from Portland here, and then you have guest chefs from, like, Seattle and San Francisco. It's become a very big event, and it's, like, so much fun.
And I hope it grows even more, because it's one of the aspects of cooking that I think a lot of people are very unaware of, not as much as they should be at this point. I think a lot of people would be pleasantly surprised in terms of the product that comes out of this type of cuisine, and this type of product that's available for us as chefs to purchase. And I think we love to prepare it because it's such amazing product.
Oh, it's good stuff. I mean, we've had one better thing after the next better thing. Where exactly is the resort at the mountain? It's Welsh's Oregon. Could you explain where that is?
It's between, kind of between Sandy and Government Camp. It's kind of on your way up to Mount Hood. I've been here about a year and a half prior to this. It was a kind of a golf-oriented type of resort, and now they're kind of trying to make it an overall a resort that's for pretty much any type of guest overall. It's been here for quite some time. Billy Welch, I believe, is his name. Don't quote me on that either because I don't know the name specifically, but he was the gentleman that started this resort almost close to about 100 years ago.
But it's very modern, so they maintain it and update it a lot.
We actually just went through a pretty high-end, roughly about a $15 or $16 million renovation. They redid all the rooms. They did part of the golf course, the restaurant, the lobby. They put a lot of time and effort into it, and we've ended up with a pretty amazing product, I must say. I mean, it was night and day. I got to see it before. I was one of the very few that got to see the before and after product, and I'm very amazed in terms of the transition.
Is there a website people can go to see a little bit more about it?
It's a www. theresort.com. There's also links to some of the other parts of the site, like the restaurants are located on that website as well.
How many restaurants do you have?
We have two. We have Altitude, which is our fine dining restaurant, and then we have Mallard's, which is kind of it's a cafe and pub located near the golf course, kind of catering towards basically the golfers and more towards families. The Altitude is a little bit more, it's catered towards the foodie or the fine diner. That is the place where I mostly practice. I mean, a lot of my background starting in cooking, obviously, it had to come from somewhere, and a lot of that was preparing, you know, family-style cuisine, simple cuisine. That was, you know, pub-style food on the other side in Mallard's. But, I mean, it's all great food, and there's no question. That's our ultimate goal is no matter what, I mean, we want to serve great food no matter who we're catering to.
Now, are you native?
I spent a majority. I've only been out here on the coast for about 9 years, roughly. I spent a majority of my life in the Midwest, in the Chicago area, a little bit in Minnesota. Had some time. That's where I kind of got my start. So, I love it out there. I haven't been back in a while, but I kind
where
of miss
Chicago
the,
or where, Minnesota.
In Chicago. That's where a majority of my time was spent. I love that town. It's
where'd you work?
Well, Chicago was kind of the start of my cooking career. It was a family style restaurant, so it wasn't anything of near what I do at this point. I mean, it was, you know, flipping burgers, making, you know, club sandwiches, doing, like, you know, chef salads and stuff like that, a family-style restaurant, you know, called Baker's Square. And, I mean, it was one of my first cooking jobs. I think I fell in love with the industry there and kind of shifted my way on and helped some local chefs open little delis and restaurants and ended up going to college and then culinary school from there. So,
aren't you surprised that Chicago has ended up as a showcase of experimental cuisine?
You know, I love it out there. I mean, to me, it's one of the restaurant meccas, I think, in this entire country. It's one of my favorite chef out of there right now is Grant Achatz.
Oh, you love Grant.
From Alinea. Yeah. He went to the CIA. He was a graduate of the school I went to as well. And just looking at the food he does and the concept he has and, you know, what he'd been through to get to where he is.
Oh, he's amazing.
It just amazed me. And there's one place in the entire world I could ever eat. Like Anthony Bourdain says, if there's one place, you know, he could eat for his last meal, if I was given that choice, that would be the place for me to go. It's impressive.
Anthony Bourdain would like to have his last meal at Alinea?
No, he was asked that question a while back.
Oh, I see.
And I think his big part was St. John's, actually, from Fergus Henderson.
Oh, that's right. I think he did do that.
That was his big thing. To me, it's like I would love to. I mean, honestly, I wouldn't, you know, I'd love to be at the point where I could just go eat there no matter what. But because of everything he does, every component of the food that he incorporates, he really accentuates the aromas more than anybody when it comes to the cuisine.
And you do that, do you?
You know, I don't do that as so much right now. I would love to be able to do it. The way he approaches it is like he's developed his own dinnerware, his own serviceware, his own way of presenting the food. And I think that's something that out here especially needs to be gradually incorporated into the style of cuisine. We tried a little bit of the molecular, you know, for lack of a better word, because I don't like the word myself, but the molecular.
He doesn't either,
I don't even know what to call it, but really.
I keep calling it experimental.
It is, and that's probably a good word. And we've tried to incorporate that a little bit here and there, and I think people are receptive to it, but I don't think you can throw it all at them at once. So I think if we're given the opportunity to gradually incorporate it into our cuisine, I think people will definitely accept it quite a bit more, and then maybe we can incorporate it a little bit more.
Are you doing that here?
We did a little bit on our first menu. We've kind of scaled back a little bit. We haven't done it as much as we would have liked to. We actually have this anti-griddle here. It's a tabletop system it's like a flat top griddle, but instead of being hot, it's cold. It freezes to minus 30. Something Grant Ackett's kind of worked on developing, and so we actually have that here.
I didn't realize you had that here.
Well, we had it available for the chefs to use during the competition, but in the past 2 years we've had it available. Only one chef has made an attempt at using it, and that's Joseba from Harvest Vine. He tried to use it last year, but a lot of people are a little bit intimidated by it just because it's such a new piece of equipment. But it's amazing. I mean, we've frozen just about anything on there except our own tongues. I mean,
can you cook his breakfast tomorrow?
You know, actually, tomorrow's going to be tomorrow.
I'm joking. I didn't know that we
were missing. I'll probably be with the other chefs recovering from tonight. So.
Well, we're going to let you go because you have a little buffet to put together.
It is actually. It's going to be pretty amazing. Like I said, it's pretty over the top, and hopefully next year when given the opportunity again, we'd definitely like to try and outdo ourselves yet again.
Thank you so much.
Paul, it's been so interesting.
Yeah, this is a party. You're the host. You did a great job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate
Thanks
you guys being here.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take another break, but we hope you're not sated because we have lots more to offer on the other side.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Here we are, as I said again, and one of the things that's most interesting about the whole culinary community in Portland, Oregon, is, I mean, they have the sense of continuity, the sense of camaraderie.
They're all connected. It's really quite amazing for what you might consider a rather young city in terms of its growth. There's such a cohesive, if you like, a restaurant movement. And first up after, now we're going to pick up on someone who had quite a big hand in helping to make that happen. And then a fascinating couple who decided that the thing they needed to do most was have a cheese store on a corner in a residential suburb in Portland.
And that's a fun
place. And the rest is history, and you'll hear the fascinating story, and I think when you hear it, you'll want to go.
Chef Philippe Boulot, bonjour. Now, you've had a very interesting background, and we're interviewing you here in Portland because you're actually a major influence on the development of a style of cooking that combines French techniques with the products of the Pacific Northwest. Tell us a little bit about your background. First of all, you were born in...
I was born in Normandy, and I went to school in Paris, hotel and cooking school in Paris.
Right.
And I started to cook at a young age with one of my grandmas that owned a farm in Normandy. So we do kill a pig, and we do all our sausage and blood sausage and the charcuterie and the petit salé and egg cheese and everything you can do, and the lamb, and we have rabbit and chicken and big garden. So we do our own jam and marmalade. And my grandma had lots of workers in the summer, and I spent my summer helping her to feed those farm workers.
Well, you seem born to be doing what you do. Especially, you said you've been hunting and fishing since you were a child as well.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So, and that's how you ended up in Portland, you said.
Yeah, I love fishing and hunting, and I've done so everywhere, from Normandy through London, Scotland, on the East Coast, and now in Oregon. And Oregon is certainly the best destination for outdoor life. It's very rugged. There's ocean, valley, mountain, high desert, and some of the most famous river in the world.
So when they offered you the job, the secret ingredient for making the decision was that you could hunt and fish here. The secondary one was you could cook it at heat.
Yeah, I just wish. But they were aware of my passion for fishing and hunting. And the first owner of the Eastman Hotel, Mr. Stevenson, used to take me hunting and fishing in Alaska, and They live in Hood River at White Salmon, and they were family very well aware of the wildlife and outdoor. And I spent a lot of time with them. Fantastic experience.
And that's how you also ended up being involved with this Wild About Game event, right?
I got involved with the Wild About Game because when I came in town, there were very few purveyors that would take the effort to deal with things unusual. And one day I met these guys that had a red pickup and a little cooler in the back, Jeff Lesan, the owner of Nikki USA, and he was selling rabbit. And I was maybe certainly one of the first restaurants to buy a rabbit.
And that's how he started, selling the rabbits off the back of his truck.
He started, and I says, Jeff, why don't you bring foie gras here in Oregon? Because I'm a friend of Michael Guinor in Hudson Valley Foie Gras. And let's bring that here. Can you distribute it for me? And can we do game from Scotland? I have some contact. And little by little, he grew his company from nothing to a large company. And one day he wanted to put an event, and then I helped him to put the event. That's a Wild About Game now. And we had a lot of, I competed, I helped it to run it. I was a judge, and I think it's a great competition.
Oh, it's fun too. It's great.
Now, the event has spawned another event, which is another of the reasons we're in Portland, which is this evening, which is not associated with Wild About Game, except I suppose it is, because Nikki USA is the supplier, and the Heathman Hotel, where you've been cooking for so long, is where it's going to take place.
As a spin-off of this little promotion where Jeff focused more on his purveyors, I wanted to focus more on the culinary side and invite some very good chef to cook a gourmet meal. So I told Jeff that I will, right after his event, I will put a gourmet food together with wine pairing that shows the gourmet side of the game world.
Now, this is the first time this has been done, though.
No, I've done that for a couple of years.
Oh, okay. So it's all
but
part
it's
of
the first
program.
Time we have that many guest chefs. We have Chris Constantino from San Francisco, Vitaly Pelli, Gabe Brucker, and myself cook for a meal for 60 people. So, and we are very intense about our cooking, so it's promising to be an interesting meal.
I'm excited about it. We're going to be there.
I said to Melissa, I said, why don't we come just a few minutes before the dinner and interview Chef Philippe, and she said, I don't really think so. So there's about 5 hours to go to dinner kickoff. So I'm guessing you're probably headed there pretty soon.
And tomorrow I'll do a dinner here as well as a club on Wednesday night. So we'll do another dinner with Jeff Lesan to help the members to where to order game and how to prepare it.
You're just referring to a recent transition, I guess, in your career, because you're still associated with the Heathman Hotel.
Yeah, I'm the culinary director.
But you're doing something else, which is even.
I'm the executive chef at the Milton O'Mac Club.
But this is not just an ordinary club.
It's the largest athletic club in the world.
it's
22,000 membership.
And you said 5 dining rooms?
There's 5 outlet, and it's 4 restaurant and banquet. It's a busy place.
Were you trying to prove something, or were you fed up with it? I mean, what happened?
Oh, I stayed 15 years at this man, and it was time to leave the cuckoo's nest and move on and do new things.
So what kind of food do you do here?
Here at the club, there's a gourmet restaurant called the Man's Bar. There's a season that's pretty much for kids and slightly cafeteria. There's a fast-paced pub and also an athletic restaurant takeout and large banquet.
And in the fine dining room, is that you're cooking the same kinds of things you did at the Heathman?
The fine dining room, I just cook lunch and dinner, and we focus on ingredients from the region, seasonal, and we promote the farmers and what Oregon has the best to offer. And my style is quite similar to the Eastman, but more clubby and more on the steakhouse side of what I used to do.
Who belongs to this club? What kind of people?
Well, 22,000 members. It's the 10th largest city in Oregon. So it's a very varied crowd of people from all over.
It's amazing.
There's lots
amazed.
Of history.
It has a lot of history?
Yeah, it was created, 100 years ago? I'm actually not completely sure of the history, but
it's
this
is
old
a new building.
There's plenty of transformation, and that was there a long time ago.
Yeah, but this is a new building, the facility. It's a modern facility.
In a part of the old building. It looks like there's 5 different phases of construction.
Oh, okay.
And one of the treats you can have if you're a football fan, I'm not sure whether Portland State is really much of a power in football, but you can sit
the
on...
The PGA Park is right next door, and they play baseball, football, and soccer.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, Philippe, this has been... thank you for receiving us here and talking to us, and I can't wait for this dinner tonight.
Well,
it's going to be exciting.
Let's just make everybody jealous and have Philippe describe the dish that he's going to put on tonight.
Well, tonight I'm going to do an hors d'oeuvre of elk heart empanadas, and after my main dish would be a fallow venison wrapped in applewood smoked bacon, served with a squash confit in bourbon, and cream spinach, and a huckleberry sauce, sweet and sour sauce.
It
wow.
sounds wonderful. And you paired some wine. You paired some wines to go with this too?
I have not seen the wine pairing
oh,
yet, but at this man, we have a great sommelier, and he promised me to have a fantastic selection. So.
Okay, so he's doing that.
And
he's
we have one of the best wine seller at this man, so.
So now, if this is going to be an annual event, how do people find out about it?
To connect with Jeff at Nikki USA and ask him when is the next World About game. And always we'll do a game dinner around this season. Hunting season open October 10 in Oregon, so all the hunters are very focused on the season and the game, and the school's just started. So it's the beginning of the holiday season at the Eastman, and you'll see a series of huge event. We have an Oktoberfest coming very soon. I have a chocolate event, and we have a sommelier event and some winemaker event. We'll have something going on almost every week until Christmas.
Now, wow. When you were growing up in Norma, did you ever think that your adventure might stray this far from home?
Here's something very important. It's like when I was a kid in Normandy, I had a dream to come and travel and be a chef one day in the States. And all through my career, I went that direction, and it did happen.
So it's sort of like a dream lifetime.
Pretty much, yeah.
And you've got decades yet to go. What are you going to do next?
Thank you very much. I think I'm very well put here in Portland. I love the town. It fits my character. I'm raising my kids here. So we're going to stay in Oregon for a long time.
Well, I think one thing I can tell you, because everyone we've met and talked to about you has said this, Portland loves you too. And
oh, thank you.
And they're glad you're here, and we're glad you're here, and we're looking forward to this evening.
Oh, great, thank you.
Thank you, Philippe.
What's the first thing you ask somebody from Alaska? And I guess probably, at least as far as On the Menu is concerned, we were most fascinated by what they think about ex-Governor Sarah Palin. So Lou Anne Schooler had something unprintable to say about that. So we're going to have to talk about something else. And listeners, I'm really fascinated because it turns out Lou Anne is a recovered actress. And if I were to describe her, I would say she looks quite a lot like Lily Tomlin. Welcome to On the Menu Radio, Lou Anne.
Thank you.
And we're on a street corner in the Irvington section.
Historic
Irvington. Portland, Oregon. Which is not exactly on the beaten track. Lou Anne, give us a snapshot of where we are.
Well, we're in a very small building surrounded by lovely homes in the historic Irvington area. This building has been a grocery store on this site since 1926, and it was the only commercial building in the area for a long time, and when it was renovated a few years ago, we thought it would be the perfect place to open our little cheese shop. So that's what we did.
Now, you went beyond just being a little cheese shop.
Well, it's true. The space was a little bit bigger than we originally anticipated getting. And so as we got further into it, we became more than just a cheese shop, and we started adding other products and wine and wonderful charcuterie, and then we started doing a few sandwiches and then, of course, a little bit of other prepared foods. And now we just think of ourselves as a place where there's just good food.
And it's called, by the way, Foster and Dobbs, and there's a story to that, too.
Yes, it is. It's named after our mothers. It's our mothers' maiden names. So my mother is Lita Dobbs Schuler, and Tim's mom is Grace Foster Wilson. And they're the ones who taught us to cook. They're the ones who taught us what we know or knew about food as young people. And so it seemed appropriate to name the shop after them. So it's Foster and Dobbs.
Now, we're a little distance from the center of Portland. If I can describe how we got here. We came on the MAX to the Lloyd Center, a horrendous example of modern architecture that stands in the way of one's progress if what you're trying to do is walk from that train stop to Foster and Dobbs, but in a really delightful, quiet residential neighborhood. How did you pick out the neighborhood, or were you living here? Or?
Well, we live not too far from here, and we loved this neighborhood. We wanted the shop to be in a neighborhood rather than in a commercial district, because our original idea has always been sort of a little, kind of a general store in a way, where people from the neighborhood can stop in and get what they need for dinner and such, but with really interesting, tasty food. And this neighborhood is full of people who are interested in good food. They're interested in the quality of the food, that the food be not a bunch of chemically raised and things that have ingredients that you have no idea what something might be. So it's a well-educated, interested sort of group of people that live around here. And
walking over here, we passed people who had houses that had vegetables growing where lawns would be in their front gardens, tomatoes, and then in the green strips along the sidewalks, there'd be herbs planted. I mean, they obviously they care about food.
Yeah, and Portland is very interested in locally grown food, and, well, you can't get much more local than, you know, your front yard. And I think it's an interesting characteristic of Portland that people will have their vegetable gardens as their front yard. It's not sort of tucked away in the back. It's wherever the sun is.
Is that
best.
A new thing, or have they always done that?
I don't really know. I think it's kind of always been that way. It's certainly always been that way in the 6 years that Tim and I have lived here. And Portland's kind of a casual town, so I think if you're growing vegetables, you just want them where the sun is going to get to them, and if that's the front
is the
yard.
Because there are all these mature trees, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for someone from out of town, for a tourist from out of town, there are some interesting reasons that I have assembled that people might want to make this sort of short trek that we did.
Okay.
First of all, you're actually not very far from where many people might go in Portland if they're sports fans.
Right.
Because the Rose Center, which is the home of the basketball arena for the Portland Trailblazers, is just down the road. And there's another Coliseum. Do they play baseball there?
No, they don't. That's quite controversial.
That's quite controversial. Okay,
we should move on.
In that case, we won't go there. But if you happen to be crazy enough to go to the Lloyd Center, like I just mentioned, this is a wonderful opportunity to try something different than the fast food that's there. But this is not just a small-scale operation. This is a place where Luann and Tim picked the very best products from around the world and assembled them here. 120 to 150 cheeses, mostly from the United States, all absolutely delicious, in pristine condition, we know, because we just had some at lunchtime.
Oh, good.
And world-class salumi from Mario Batali's father's operation in Seattle and some other great places.
You might mention, by the way, in passing, that we just didn't grab a plate of something. They actually have facilities for eat-in, a small number of tables.
Yeah, we have a few tables where people
and
can
a menu.
Come and eat.
I failed to make that clear, didn't I? I thought I said it was a lunch destination, and that was sufficient, but it obviously wasn't.
Well, we're a little bit of a funny hybrid because we are a market, but we do have a little menu. But we're not a full-service restaurant, but we're not a full-service grocery store. And so we just think we're a place where you can come and get some really good food. And if you want to have it here, great. We'll be happy to, you know, plate things up for you, and if you want to take it away and make it at home, excellent.
This kind of establishment is fairly widespread in the Portland area. We were talking about that before we came on there, weren't we? It's a sort of the sandwich idea and get some excellent provisions in a place where you buy your sandwich.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's widespread that you can get good provisions in a place where you buy a sandwich. I think that there are maybe a couple of other places like us in that way. But I do think that the idea of sandwiches and more casual food done in a really interesting and innovative way, that's definitely a Portland thing. The street cart scene here is very lively. Oh, very, very lively. Yeah. There's some wonderful street carts here. So that kind of interesting, small, grab-and-go kind of food is all over Portland. But as far as other shops where you can come and, you know, buy cheese and eat it there and have it plated for you, in that sense, I think we may be the only one.
Now, this is also a place where you can get something to drink to go with your meal, too.
Yeah, we always have a few glasses of wine that we can pour, or you can have a beer, or you can...
There are more than a few bottles of wine on the shelf, too.
True. We have about maybe 150 different labels of wine. We have a small, tightly curated collection of wine.
And if you saw something you liked,
you can
would open it. And
absolutely. You know, we'll be happy to pour it for you.
Well, this is like a nerve center for the neighborhood, too, in the sense that you have... We're sitting... How long is this table we're sitting at right now?
This table is probably 10 or 12 feet long.
Right.
And it'll seat 12.
And they do wine tastings. They do demos explaining classes, explaining cuts of pork.
Yeah.
They do cheese making.
Well, we have we do classes. We do a couple classes a month on either Cheese 101 or Pairing Cheese and Wine, or we just did a class with Tails and Trotters, which is a project, a pork raising and curing project that does hazelnut finished pork.
Yeah, we just had that somewhere.
Well, we had a dish called that, and maybe it was because it was the pork. So it was a sandwich.
Interesting.
It was a porchetta and mushroom d'Uxelles mixed sandwich at Wildwood.
And they had
porchetta on the dinner menu the night before. But they called it Tails and Trotters.
Well, it probably is that. Yes.
Our waitress didn't explain why, but that's indeed a brand.
It's a very small, yes. It's two fellows, and they just did a class for us, and they talked about their project and talked about different cuts of pork and how you use them and how you cut them. So we kind of have classes on a wide variety of
you
things.
You have a cookbook, a food cookbook.
Do we have a cookbook?
I see you have a club here, a culinary book group.
They have met from time to time, and really we just try to use our space to invite people in for whatever they want. We have a do-it-yourself cheese-making group that meets every couple of months where we just, essentially we open our space and say, any of you do-it-yourself cheesemakers who would like to meet like-minded folks, come to Foster and Dobbs at 7:30 on this date and talk amongst yourselves. So it just provides a way for people to come together and, you know, share what they're doing with others and maybe learn some things. And it's important to us that we have some kind of offering to the community beyond just, oh, great, you can come and buy things here.
But they can buy, because I watch people gift baskets. Tell us about that program, about gift baskets.
A lot of times we have people come in and they're looking for a gift for somebody, and we'll help them put together a collection of interesting things and we'll...
There are some customers walking by right now. No,
and it's just
please.
Fine.
You must come and buy something. We're sitting in the middle of it all, and people are sort of tripping over our kids.
Yeah.
We were going to have to let you go back to doing some business very soon.
Well, soon.
But this is just... how can I describe it? It's an oasis. It's a quiet...
Oh, thank you.
It's a quiet visit away from the hustle and bustle of the city of Portland, which certainly has plenty of hustle and bustle in the city.
Luann,
and if you're here, you can actually have a party, too, you know.
Oh, sure you could have a party. Well, yeah. we had a small one of our own anyway.
Yeah.
tell our listeners, give us a website name and then the days and hours that you're open.
Okay. The website is easy. It's www.fosterandDobbs, all spelled out, .com. And we're open 11 to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 6 on Sunday.
Well, you don't have any downtime, huh?
I have a day off.
Oh, well, that's good.
One day. Tim's in charge on your day off?
No, our crack staff.
A crack staff. Well, that's right. Well, you have a crack staff, the wonderful man who selected the cheeses, knew every single cheese and all about it, and every piece of meat that we had,
yes,
and all about that, too.
Yes, no, we're very lucky that we have excellent people working for us.
And if you're looking for rusticella pasta, if you're looking for the best of just about any kind
of you can rest assured
that
the people who selected to put this product on these shelves, that they know what they're doing.
One of the reasons they know what they're doing is because quite a lot of these products have crossed on the menu's doorstep as well.
Yeah, they're good products. So, but I found some that I had never heard of, and I'm going to try some of those.
Oh, excellent.
So you can take a stroll through the Irvington neighborhood. You can take the number 8 bus from the MAX stop at the mall if you insist on stopping there. We suggest that if it's a lovely day, you should come here and sit outside, and if it's a rainy day, you can come and sit inside.
Sit inside.
Either way, Luann and Tim will welcome you to Foster and Dobbs, and you'll know it was worth the visit. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for coming.
We loved it. It's a great place to hang.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Luann.
Well, that sure turned out to be an action-packed program.
And we haven't even talked about all the other festivals. There seems to be something going on every single weekend, every single week in Oregon.
You're talking about, in Portland. There's a distillers conference going on that we found out about.
Did something with foragers.
Just a few days ago.
Yeah.
And
then we didn't even mention the fact that they're a leader in this whole trend for food carts. They're everywhere.
So we're just going to have to go back, I guess. What a shame. We just have to go back and explore some more. And in the meantime, I guess it's time to say goodbye for another week. We'll see you here, same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.